Good morning, this is Linda, and I'll be reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. I'm going to begin reading off of the front page, and the first article is submitted by Tony Reed out of Decatur, titled Fallen Sailor Laid to Rest, with the subtitle Logan Palmer, hailed as a hero who tried to save others on warship. Central Illinois said goodbye to fallen sailor Logan Palmer on a bright and sunny fall Monday, a day already filled with patriotic emotion on the 16th anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks of 2001. Palmer, 23, had died August 21st, one of 10 sailors lost on the warship USS John McCain after a collision with a tanker near Singapore. Pastor Reverend Mark Cooper told hundreds of mourners at Decatur's Life Foursquare Church, including U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican out of Taylorville, that he had heard Palmer died a true hero, surviving the initial collision but staying in harm's way to try and help his fellow shipmates. The pastor said his wife, Lynn, had talked of Palmer's heroism with the sailor's sister, Madison. When Lynn asked what she thought about Logan placing himself in harm's way, Madison responded, "I wish he hadn't." He said, then she went on to say, "But that's what Palmers do." Looking out at the Palmer family in the front pews, Decatur parents Sid and Teresa, sister Madison, brothers Austin and Caleb, grandparents, and other relatives, Cooper said it was hard not to wonder what the last moments of the sailor's life were like. Perhaps you wish you could have been there with him as he breathed his last, with him to comfort and console him, with him to express your love and affection, with him to say goodbye, Cooper told the hushed sanctuary. But this was not possible, and in this way, Logan's sacrifice is also your sacrifice. You have given a son, a brother, a grandson, a friend, to a grateful nation. That nation and its citizens owe you and Logan a debt of gratitude. Palmer's flag-draped casket was carried into the church by a naval honor guard in dress uniform. Navy officers and sailors saluted the casket that lay at the front of the cavernous church sanctuary, surrounded by sprays of flowers in red, white, and blue. The sailors were followed by troops of Boy Scouts who also saluted in turn, marking the loss of one of their own. Palmer had achieved the rank of Eagle Scout. Two scouts, Tanner Owens and Mark Reed, stood before the congregation to perform the ceremony of the broken arrow, symbolizing farewell to a fellow scout who had distinguished himself. Snapping an arrow in half, they said the act was symbolic of the end of strife and the beginning of peace, quote unquote. Music for the funeral service included a medley of Over the Rainbow and What a Wonderful World, requested by the Palmer family, and sung by Foursquare Church worship director Christian Sandel, who accompanied himself on ukulele. Palmer's casket was carried out to the haunting John Williams music, Hymns to the Fallen, which was part of the Saving Private Ryan movie score. Mourners entering and leaving the sanctuary passed tables laden with treasured fragments of Palmer's short life, his Eagle Scout badge and Pinewood Derby racing cars, his fishing rod, and a treasured Lego toy, and a blizzard of captured memories and pictures showing him at every stage of life, from smiling baby to proud and newly minted sailor. After the service, his funeral procession, escorted by police and fire vehicles, passed under a vast American flag held suspended between two tower trucks from the Decatur Fire Department. Police halted traffic, and even passers-by stood with their hands over their hearts as the gleaming white hearse made its slow progression towards Harristown Cemetery, where Palmer was buried with full military honors. The funeral route was lined with well-wishers, many of whom did not know who Logan Palmer was until they were told, and then they were happy to wait and pay their respects. They included people like Billy K. Duggar, from Springfield, who watched the procession near Sharon United Methodist Church at Center Street and Wickles Road. I just saw the flags and I didn't know what it was, but I just felt in my heart that it was something I needed to sit here for, Duggar said. My family is a military family. My father was in the Navy. It's a shame that our country is as bad as it is, and it's wonderful that there are people who are young who are out there fighting for us, Duggar added. I wish I could help them all, but I can't. All I can do is sit here and pray. Marshall Sperry from Decatur also watched the procession near Sharon United Methodist Church. He does know one of Palmer's older brothers and has been following the events closely. He set up a tripod to take pictures of the procession going by. He attended other processions before to honor fellow citizens. I want to honor Logan and the rest of his family, Sperry said. Donna Kerfoot from Harristown watched near the cemetery and said she came to the procession out of respect for Palmer and for the flag. I went through this for Vietnam people, so it's very emotional, she said. It's about paying respect to the young man for his service and to the flag, since so many people are not respecting the flag anymore. That concludes that article on Logan Palmer. The next article is also on the front page. It is submitted by Jalen Cook out of Decatur. It is titled, Dedication Marks the 911 Memorial, with a subtitle, 30-foot-tall sculpture pays homage to September 11th. As they waited for the blue tarps to be removed from the 911 Memorial late Monday afternoon, Jim and Judy Odell took pictures of the covered structure. The Decatur couple said they first learned that the memorial would be revealed during a public unveiling earlier that morning and decided to attend the event as a way to pay homage to those who died during the September 11th attacks 16 years ago. I think it is great that Decatur has this, Jim Odell said of the memorial. I think it'll help all of us remember 911. Time passed, and a large crowd gathered at the memorial site on the Nelson Park lakefront to watch as the tarps were eventually removed to reveal the shining stainless steel structure in its finished form. Standing at nearly 30 feet tall, with a steel I-beam recovered from the World Trade Center incorporated into its design, the memorial was greeted with a round of enthusiastic applause from those who attended. We live in the most giving and caring community in the state of Illinois, said Lieutenant John Butts of the Macon County Sheriff's Office. This memorial is another symbol of it. Butts was among several speakers who addressed the crowd and discussed the importance of having the memorial in Decatur. Others included Sheriff's Office Lieutenants Antonio Brown and Jim Root, Mayor Pro Tempore Dana Ray, who declared September 11th as a day of service and remembrance in the city, and Corey Kistner. Kistner, a United States Marine Corps veteran who was deployed to Afghanistan after the September 11th attacks, reached out to memorial organizers and helped raise funds after learning about the project. I knew that I had to be involved because I had to remember all of the people, including my fellow veterans and my fellow Marines, who gave that ultimate sacrifice, he said. The unveiling of the 911 memorial comes about 2 years after the George A. Mueller Beer Company led a strong campaign to bring the salvaged I-beam from New York to Decatur. Lauren Axe, liaison for the memorial, said the odds of Decatur receiving a piece of steel recovered from Ground Zero were initially slim. It didn't look good, but we kept calling and we kept talking, and in September of 2015, we were awarded the 15.5-foot I-beam, she said. When the beam arrived to Central Illinois on October 25, 2015, it was always intended to become the centerpiece for a monument. Through several fundraising efforts, including patriotic tattoos by Oakwood Tattoo and a Mardi Gras donation from St. Patrick's School, the people of Decatur helped organizers raise the $70,000 needed to build the memorial. This memorial is built largely in part by $20 donations here and there, but the generous members of our community who left their mark on this beautiful memorial for the years to come, said Cornwall Group Program Director Storm Edwards, who served as a memorial liaison. On July 5th, the Decatur Park District Board approved the proposed lakefront location for the memorial, and its construction began on August 1st, while the E.L. Pruitt Company built the steel twin towers that make up a majority of the memorial. More than 70 union workers volunteered to put it all together. In addition to the memorial, a time capsule was buried under the lawn of the Macon County Courthouse. Organizers and attendees held a small ceremony dedicating the capsule before heading to Nelson Park to unveil the memorial. Looking forward, Kistner said that he hopes the memorial will not only be important to those who experienced 911, but also to future generations as well. A lot of people can't travel to Ground Zero, he said. A lot of people can't travel to Pearl Harbor, but they can travel to Lake Decatur, and you can come up close and you see this I-beam up close and personal. Hopefully, they can feel that feeling and feel connected to all of those people who gave their lives. That concludes the article, but I do have a little mention of donating toward 911 Memorial. If you would like to donate toward the memorial by purchasing an engraved memorial brick or a park bench, visit 911decaturmemorial.org for more information. A standard memorial brick is valued at $140, a corner brick is $260, and a park bench is $1,800. And that concludes that article. Also on the front page, we have Irma Showers Coming, submitted by Claire Hettinger, and a subtitle of More Than 7 Million in the Southeast U.S. Without Power. Irma may have left Florida, but the trail of mayhem left behind will linger for months, a scene that came into focus Monday as hurricane-battered residents returned to find scattered homes and a 400-mile path of damage. After trouncing through Georgia and the Carolinas, remnants of the weakened storm are expected to be felt in central Illinois as soon as Tuesday. 5 deaths in Florida were blamed on Irma, along with 2 in Georgia. At least 34 people were killed in the Caribbean as the storm closed in on the U.S. mainland. Officials say about 6.5 million Floridians have been left without power, while more than 800,000 people in Georgia were also without electricity. Irma's exit from Florida ends days of anxiety and prep work. Former Decatur City Councilman Larry Foster was at his new home in Fort Myers, Florida, when he and his wife evacuated last week. They made it through bumper-to-bumper traffic back to Illinois. "This was quite an experience for us, this evacuation," he said. "We've never experienced anything like that." Foster said they had plane tickets for Saturday, but those were canceled Wednesday, prompting a tough decision. They could weather the storm without power, air conditioning, and in dangerous wind speeds, or they could drive back. "So we decided to head out," he said. Their trip included people running out of gas and limited hotel rooms, he said. People camped out at the rest stops, parked in the grass, and spent the night. It was pretty sad, he said. On Monday, more than 3,900 U.S. flights scheduled for the day were canceled by late morning, and more than 9,000 since Saturday, according to tracking service FlightAware. During its rainy, windy run up the full 400-mile length of Florida, Irma swamped homes, uprooted trees, flooded streets, snapped miles of power lines, and toppled construction cranes. "How are we going to survive from here?" asked Gwen Bush, who waded through high, thigh-deep floodwaters outside her Central Florida home to reach National Guard rescuers and get a ride to a shelter. "What's going to happen now? I just don't know." Around the Tampa-St. Petersburg area, where Irma rolled through early Monday, damage appeared modest, and the governor said damage on the southwest coast, including in Naples and Fort Myers, was not as bad as feared. "In the Keys, though," he said, "there is devastation." Shannon Crawley of Clinton has been watching television for information on Naples, where her mother, Virginia Fleming, lives with her husband, Ken. They left Thursday and headed to Mobile, Alabama, she said. They are still there and are planning to head back Wednesday. Locally, Ameren, Illinois officials said more than 200 employees and contract workers are going to help with recovery efforts. The American Red Cross will also fast-track training for volunteers who are interested in helping with relief efforts in areas affected by Hurricanes Irma and Harvey. The Decatur training session is 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on September 30th at the Red Cross office, 2674 North Main Street. Midwest Food Bank and the American Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region have relief supplies and volunteers on the way to Florida to assist survivors of Hurricane Irma, even as both organizations continue to help survivors of Hurricane Harvey in Texas. This will be a long-term relief effort, said Phil Hodel, spokesman for Normal-based Midwest Food Bank. Especially with Irma, we will be assembling, packing, and shipping disaster relief boxes for months to come. The Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region has deployed 90 volunteers and staff to Texas and Louisiana since Hurricane Harvey hit the Texas coast on August 25th. Red Cross Regional Communications Director Trish Barnett said on Monday. Some of them already have completed their deployment, but more are being dispatched. Of the 90, 25 were from Central Illinois, Burnett said. 17 of the 25 remain deployed. Meanwhile, 12 volunteers and staff have been deployed by the Red Cross region to Florida to assist with Hurricane Irma relief, Burnett said. Two of the 12 are from Central Illinois. We will deploy many more to Irma in the coming days, she said. The National Weather Service projects what remains of Irma will produce showers in the Decatur region by midweek. Scattered showers are predicted in southeast Illinois on Tuesday, moving into the central part of the state by the evening. The Weather Service said areas as far north as New York are seeing clouds associated with the storm. Foster said he doesn't know the fate of his property in Fort Myers in the southwest portion of the state. The golf course outside their home, he heard, now looks more like a lake. Someone will check on their property for them, and they plan to go back in October to check for themselves. But Foster said they need a break until then. There are things in life that you don't really plan for, and you just have to adapt. And we did the best we could under the circumstances. We are very thankful. While South Carolina avoided Irma's eye, the massive storm caused severe flooding and tropical storm force winds that left hundreds of thousands without power Monday. Wind gusts up to 72 miles per hour were detected on Folly Beach, Charleston. Charleston reported its third highest recorded storm surge as the center of the storm moved some 250 miles away through Florida and Georgia. By Monday afternoon, about 250,000 customers lacked power across the state. Governor Henry McMaster knew of no fatalities, but he urged people not to drive. There's no need to put yourself or your family or first responders at risk, he said. Residents of the Charleston Peninsula waded in waist-deep waters, and waves pushed the iconic graffiti boat near Folly Beach back into the waves. The boat has been painted continually since Hurricane Hugo stranded it along the roadside in 1989. And that concludes that article. From the area calendar, on Tuesday, nonprofit marketing professional meetup from 2 to 3 p.m. Tuesday at the Normal Public Library. Tech It Out, that's T-E-C-H, Tech It Out, 3 to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Normal Public Library, ages 5 to 12, and also 5 to 6:30 p.m. on September 20th. The Trump Presidency and Executive Power, from the immigration ban to the Arpaio pardon, panel discussion from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, room 244, Schroeder Hall at Illinois State University in Normal. Phone number is area code 309 438-8638. And on Wednesday, registration taken for Tinkering Tweens, 3:30 p.m. and 5 p.m., September 27th at the Normal Public Library. Registration required. Moving into the local and state section, the Herald and Review does Celebrate What's Great About Our Region article, 100 Reasons to Love the Decatur Area. Today's article is titled Kreckel's Chicken Car, a Decatur Marketing Staple. Bill Kreckel opened his eponymous restaurant more than 50 years ago, and the iconic Kreckel Burger was born. But it wasn't until later that the idea for the similarly iconic chicken car, quote, end quote, came. A marketing gem was hatched. Anyone who sees that car going down the road or parked in front of the business would think of Kreckel's. Troy Teal, a Kreckel grandson, told the Herald and Review in 2014. That was the idea, and it worked. They're hard to miss. The patriotic cars are painted red, white, and blue with a fiberglass rooster head, mouth agape, and tail behind. While Kreckel's may be more known for burgers and custard than chicken, the cars catch the attention of passersby, especially kids. Indie folk singer Sufjan Stevens even mentions Chicken Mobile with your rooster tail in his 2005 song Decatur. Chicken Mobile with your rooster tail in his 2005 song Decatur, or a round of applause for your stepmother. I'm sorry, that was just a little confusing. It reads confusing. So I'm going to move to the next paragraph. Kreckel, whose chain of burger stands has grown to include multiple locations, has known to loan the cars for parades and weddings. His 2003 funeral procession naturally featured the chicken Cadillacs. Everybody smiles when they see those cars, said Teal. And really, I think that is what Bill Kreckel enjoyed the most about them. Apologize for a little bit of misreading on that, but that does end that story on Kreckel's chicken car. Next article in the local and state is submitted by Rob Stroud. It comes out of Greenup and is titled Corvette Fun Fest Tour to Visit Greenup. The Corvette Fun Fest road tour will culminate Thursday evening in Greenup, which is about 75 miles southeast of Decatur, where a party will be held downtown for tour participants and the general public. Mid-America Motorworks of Effingham plans to host its 24th annual Corvette Fun Fest from Thursday to Sunday and has scheduled this event's 2017 Fun Run road tour to start at 4:30 p.m. Thursday. Participating Corvette enthusiasts will head out from Mid-America Motors Work campus at 2900 North 3rd Street and travel through rural Effingham on their way to Greenup's downtown party set for 5 to 8 p.m. Greenup Chamber of Commerce President Kyle Bergbauer said the Corvette convoy, which may include up to 1,000 participants, will take old U.S. Route 40 through the Jackson Truss-covered bridge in Greenup on its way to the downtown. The Cumberland Street main thoroughfare and other streets downtown will be closed to through traffic during the party to accommodate Corvette parking and the festivities, Bergbauer said. The Village Hall grounds at the east end of downtown will host a classic rock concert by Smoke Wrench and a beer tent, while the Greenup Depot at the west end will host a country music concert by local artists. Bergbauer said the restaurants, boutiques, antique shops, craft shops, and other merchants downtown will stay open during the party and offer specials. He said approximately 20 food booths, craft makers, and other vendors have signed up for the party as well. He added that the historic Greenup Depot and the Cumberland County Military Museum downtown will be open for tours that night. Parking spaces along side streets near the downtown will likely fill up quickly Thursday night, Bergbauer said. Consequently, he said the party's organizers are offering rides to the downtown from the Cumberland County Fairgrounds and from Scott's Building Center in Greenup. Bergbauer said Mid-America Motor Works approached Greenup about hosting the downtown party as a way of providing new area scenery for road tour participants to see during the Corvette Fun Fest. He said community leaders decided to host the party as a way to showcase recent business development downtown and Greenup in general. "We love the idea. We think it's going to be a great fit," Bergbauer said. "I think it is really going to be a good thing for our downtown retail business and a good thing for our whole community." The chamber president noted that Mid-America Motor Works is encouraging Corvette Fun Fest participants to visit Greenup at other points during this event. For example, the Corvette Fun Fest schedule on Friday includes an excursion to the Moonshine Burger Shack southeast of Casey in Clark County and to Cameo Winery, or I guess it would be Cameo Winery, and the Jackson Truss Covered Bridge in Greenup. Corvette's Fun Fest organizers also plan to hold a caravan to the Coles County Dragway in Charleston for a new Corvette drag race event there at 4 p.m. on Thursday. More information about the Fun Fest is available online at corvette-funfest.com. That concludes that article. Next, we have an article out of Decatur submitted by Claire Hettinger called Social Service Options to Be on Display. About 25 different social service agencies will be available for a free Community Assistance Resource Education, or CARE, fair from 3 to 5 p.m. Wednesday at the Salvation Army Community Center at 229 West Main Street. Sarah Van Rieden, who coordinated the event with the University of Illinois Extension Office, said services will include Familia Dental, the Decatur Public School District Truancy, and Outreach Coordinator, Dove Incorporated, the New Life Pregnancy Center, Planned Parenthood, and more. We are hoping that the people Van Rieden said. The event is a good way to learn about a variety of organizations in one place, Van Rieden said. She said people who plan to attend should bring a bag to store freebies and an open mind. Come with the idea that Decatur is a place where people are willing to help them, and these are the people who are willing to offer that help, Van Rieden said. It concludes that article. Next, out of Shelbyville, we have Shelbyville Kicks Off Assisted Living Week. Residents of Shelbyville's Villas of Hollybrook welcomed area first responders to breakfast on Monday morning as both a reminder of 911 and to kick off National Assisted Living Week. Shelbyville Mayor Jeff Johnson signed a proclamation. The Shelbyville High School band played, and almost 30 residents released purple balloons after the breakfast. "Our residents have been and continue to be vital parts of this community," said Hollybrook Director Jenny Stevens. "We like to have every opportunity for people to interact." Shelbyville's ambulance EMTs Tom Coventry and Teresa Welton had biscuits and gravy while chatting with Hollybrook residents. Stevens said many people confuse assisted living with nursing home care. Hollybrook residents live in their own apartments with meals provided, but can also have their cars, pets, and personal furniture. "The main thing is the residents become a community, and the group that meets for dinner become family to each other and look after each other. They're not isolated. Places like this keep our seniors close to home and near their friends. A business like this isn't just a good economic value for Shelbyville," Johnson said. "It also provides interaction between generations and gives residents the knowledge that their family members are living in a safe, supportive environment that helps make the whole community better." That concludes part one for the Decatur Herald and Review on Tuesday, September 12th. I'm going to take a short break, and I hope you'll return to listen to part two.